Him going into College Station, Kyle Field.
I think they both suck. I think Notre Dame
sucks.
Oh,
wow. I think that's Notre Dame sucks. Yeah.
There we go. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to overreact on this stuff.
8-0, though. And I did the math right here. So if you put $100 on all my picks, you would have won $2,000. So
Straight up. Yeah, but it doesn't work that way. It's all money line stuff.
Yeah.
We got a long season.
We got a long season ahead of us. That 8-0 is not going to stick. I can guarantee you.
You're going to get all cocky and everything, so that's fine.
Hey,
that's
two game up right now. Two game up right now. I'll take it.
946-0435. We've got a lot of Penn State discussion today. I do not get into a lot of high school football discussion and analysis and everything, but I had no fewer than a half dozen people stop me over the weekend. Did you see what happened to Altoona? Now, I'm not known as a guy that people come up and talk high school football with. That's not what I'm known for. You know, I always have a bunch of people, hey, what do you think? Penn State this, Penn State that, you know. For a half dozen people to come up to me and say, did you see what happened to Altoona? It was 50-0 at the half.
Yes. It was crazy.
We're going to talk about that a good bit today. Jared Prugar is going to join us around 4:40, kind of get a state of the Altoona High football program up there. Dan's calling in. He wants to talk about that, I know, right off the bat. But I'll give you the first crack at it real quick, Nate.
Altoona football?
50-0 at the half. A 57-0 loss to State College. Wow.
Listen, I don't want to overreact because these are high schoolers at the end of the day. I'm at the point in my life when now these kids are younger than me, which is crazy to think. But it was baffling. So, I mean, I didn't watch the first quarter, so I was busy doing stuff. But I had someone text me, it was 36-0. I'm like, that's weird. So I tune in. Not even 2 seconds later, scoop and score, State College. I mean, come on. What are we doing? 50-0 at halftime. I mean, at some point, I mean, you also got to realize these are 12-minute quarters. 12-minute quarters. So they're averaging almost a field goal every minute. It was wild. It was insane. I didn't pay full attention to it because they were on the road. I wasn't at the game. I'll be at the game this Friday. I forget who they play Friday, but I'll get, you know, eyes on it. I'll watch every play. But, I mean, listen, State College, you do not expect Altoona to go in there and win. I hate to say it, but you don't. They're just not a powerhouse like State College is. State College has a little more pull from up there. They have some better athletes, but 50-0 halftime, that is terrible for – I mean, Altoona's a relatively solid, you know, population town. They should be not losing 50-0 halftime in any sort of game.
Cumberland Valley this weekend. And, again, we're going to talk about this a good bit later on. I want to get a lot of Penn State discussion because we are going to overreact about Penn State. Mm-hmm. But Dan just happened to call in first and foremost and wants to talk some high school football. What's up, man? How you doing, Dan?
That better than I deserve. Now, Nate is not cocky. He's just intelligent.
He's cocky. I will admit it.
I am.
He's over there before the show starts ready to hand me his predictions page.
Oh, it was so funny.
He's not a bit cocky. He's just intelligent.
But here's the thing. It's fine. It's fine being arrogant. There's nothing wrong with being arrogant.
Hey, if you back it up.
If you're better
like Deion Sanders.
If you're better than some. Okay, that's great. If you're better than somebody, be arrogant. If you're Deion Sanders and you suck
I knew
and you want
to
be arrogant.
Route. I agree with you there.
All right. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, Nate, now, the ball game Friday night, I watched just about, I between watching and listening to it on the radio, both, and everything. Well, Altoona went in there with a chip on their shoulder, period. And State College was congenial at first until Altoona got real cocky and a chip on their shoulder, and then State College, they rebelled for sure, and then there was everything was going not good at all, and everything. There were scrimmages and everything in the first quarter, and everything calmed down when the player got ejected. See, then it was a whole different atmosphere. It just turned the whole page into gentlemen, basically, You know, I'd rather listen to it on the radio, but I was watching it on TV, too. That's a big plus. And it was just, it's just the way it is. And that's all I got to say. And Corey, he is not, He is not cocky.
He is.
I am cocky. I'll admit it.
He's cocky. That's fine.
I've had everybody around me say I'm cocky.
There's nothing wrong with that, Dan. Cocky takes on such a negative meaning. But
being cocky means you have confidence
in
yourself.
If you're good, my favorite Penn State football player of all time is Matt McGloin. That's the cockiest, most arrogant dude you will ever meet.
Hold up. You just said your favorite player in Penn State
Absolutely.
History is Matt McGloin.
As a media member to cover. Dude, if you would, and thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. If you would have gotten to cover Matt McGloin, a zero-star recruit, who was not offered a scholarship by anyone, and then the Paternos threw Rob Bolden in front of him. Rob Bolden is the worst starting quarterback I have ever seen in college football.
I couldn't even tell you that name.
Besides Taquan Roberson. Rob Bolden was the first true freshman to ever start for Penn State.
Okay.
Ever. He was a project for the Paternos, and he came in and was terrible, and they kept holding him, playing him over Matt McGloin, and then at halftime, Matt McGloin would come in and save the day and win the game, and then they'd go back to Bolden the next week, and then Matt McGloin would come in and save the day and win the game, then they'd go back to Bolden the next week, and it was pure and total incompetence by Joe and Jay Paterno with Rob Bolden. So anyway, all right, we are going to get to Penn State now. Because this is our overreaction portion. We got Don on the road. Don, I'll let you start off because we got a lot to discuss about Penn State and their impressive performance against West Virginia. What do you have, buddy?
I just have a quick question. I think his name's Julian Fleming.
Yeah.
The transfer from Ohio State.
Yeah.
Is there any word on him or what's the story on him? He was based on the receivers that we had the last couple years. He's supposed to be head and shoulders above all of them, and I don't even know if he was on the field the other day.
He was in the game. Yeah.
He played most of the game. He played most of the game. Before I explain what happened, I'm just curious why you felt Julian Fleming was supposed to be better than everybody else. What gave you that impression?
Well, I believe he was pretty close to the top of the Big Ten in yards per reception. And I also believe receiving touchdowns, he was in the top 10 in the Big Ten.
Last year.
No,
last year he had no touchdowns. I'll get into it, Don. This is a good discussion. This is, again, part of our overreaction. Thanks for bringing that up right off the bat, because we have a lot of good things we can talk about with Penn State. I think Julian Fleming is one of the biggest busts in the history of Pennsylvania recruiting.
Really?
He has 79 career catches.
Okay.
79. 7 touchdowns. He was never, and I repeat, never more than the number 3 wide receiver at Ohio State. Given how good of a receiver, he had 7 catches his first year for 74 yards. He had 7 catches his second year for 51 yards. His third year, he had 29 catches for 462 and 6 TDs. That's a pretty good number. But still, he was there. He was a number 3 receiver. Last year for Ohio State, 26 catches, 270 yards, no touchdowns. Julian Fleming was brought in to be a mentor. He was brought in to be a go-to guy. He works hard. He has never been an elite level kind of receiver. Now, Ohio State has had a bunch of elite level wide receivers, number 1 draft picks, Marvin Harrison, so on and so forth. They've had a bunch of guys. So that's why he's valuable to Penn State. I'm not saying Julian Fleming's not valuable to Penn State. I'm saying that I don't expect him to catch more than, quite frankly, 40 balls this year. And if he catches 40, I would actually be surprised. He's caught 79 passes in 4 years. Now, he's dealt with some injuries and stuff, but here's why he's valuable. He was just at Ohio State for 4 years, working every single day with elite-level first-round draft picks and Brian Hartline, their wide receivers coach. So you bring him to Penn State, he can be effective on the field. He can do some things, but he can also be, in a lot of ways, like a player coach, like a mentor to all these guys.
Yeah, you oftentimes see NFL teams bring like a quarterback that's, you know, older, been around the block for these younger guys, and that's sort of what they're doing with Julian Fleming, it feels like. I actually didn't realize how bad his stats really were.
Oh my God, he's never been a factor. He's never really been. Now, that 2 years ago to Ohio State, he was still their number 3 receiver.
That's what I pictured was 2 years ago. He was solid, you know, he's productive then. But looking at last year, I didn't realize he really was this inefficient. Now, to be honest, you know, I think he'll make a play here and there. He'll have, you know, a nice 20-yard reception or something, bring something in. But, yeah, he really is mentoring those younger people. He's been around for a while now. He was former, I think, four-star recruit, I want to say.
He was a five-star recruit. He was the number one player in Pennsylvania. Let me pull up the full recruiting profile from 247. In the class of 2020, he was the number four player in Pennsylvania and the number three recruit in the country.
That's wild.
Julian Fleming, who has 79 catches, was the number three recruit in the country and a 9.979. I'm going to get the all-time highest Penn State recruits here from 247. He's in the top handful.
That's really – it's baffling how he's kind of underperforming.
Well, look, he had some injuries, and he went to a place where he had guys better than him.
Listen, you had JSN there. You had Marvin Harrison Jr. The last 5 years at Ohio State's wide receivers
Olave,
have been insane.
Hartline has been the best recruiting coach in the country because he was able to do the – so, again, I don't want this to seem like I'm bashing Julian Fleming. I asked that caller why he thought Julian Fleming was going to be a go-to guy, because he never has been.
Yeah, his name just carries weight from
his name carries weight from recruiting. That's exactly what it is. I'll repeat this. He was the number three recruit in the country in the class of 2020. You're talking superstar level guy. And now, what Julian Fleming did do well Saturday, he blocked well.
I was just about to say, he was a great blocker.
You know, he did his job. He wasn't over there bitching all the time because he wasn't getting the ball like an Antonio Brown or Chad Ochocinco or OBJ, these guys. Sometimes you just need a wide receiver to shut up and do other things other than catch the ball. Meanwhile, we're going to talk a good bit on our Black and Gold show today about the Steelers' terrible receiver situation because they got George Pickens, very selfish guy. Deontay Johnson, they had to trade, very selfish guy. Santonio Holmes, selfish guy. Antonio Brown, selfish guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, look what a cancer a selfish receiver can be. That's why Julian Fleming can be an effective player for Penn State. He can come in as a role player. And if Trey Wallace goes out and catches 75 passes and Julian Fleming has 25 – that's probably not a terror. What the problem would be is if you need Julian Fleming to catch 75 passes because he's not that guy.
You said it perfectly. I think, you know, having a guy with not that big of an ego, a guy that knows his role on the team is always a good thing. And you think about it, I mean, he's still going to be a pretty solid number three receiver, number two receiver, wherever he slots in at. He's not, I mean, he still has talent. He just hasn't maybe gone out and showed it as much as you'd like to see out of a former five-star recruit. But he'll still be very solid, and I mean, I think he's going to be – you'll see him, I think, make a big play here or there that you're like, okay, well, this is the guy that we were expecting whenever, you know, we heard this guy was transferring in. Obviously, against West Virginia, doesn't do anything on the stat sheet, but if you're just talking about his role in the game, he was very, you know, effective in it. So, you know, not everything's about stats. It's more about how you perform in the field. Some stuff doesn't show up in the box score, so – Julian Fleming, I think he's still going to be a very productive player at Penn State, even if he's not catching, like you said, 70, 75 balls.
So Derek Williams is the number one recruit all time at Penn State. 0.9986 was his 247 rating. Julian Fleming was 0.9979. Now he went to Ohio State, obviously. He doesn't count on this. So Derek Williams is the highest recruit ever at Penn State. Micah Parsons is number two. And I'm going through this as we speak here. Micah Parsons was number two. His recruiting rating was and he was the number five recruit in the country. His recruiting rating was 0.9982. So for all intents and purposes, Julian Fleming's recruiting rating was the same as Micah Parsons.
It's crazy we can put that in perspective.
Yeah. So because when I said he might be one of the most overrated recruits ever for Penn State, you looked at me like I was a fool.
I didn't realize how his production's been.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking back to that 2022 year where he honestly was solid as a receiver.
He was good. Okay. Yeah. We have a lot of good stuff to get into. I'm glad the caller mentioned that because that is one thing that we will have to keep an eye on. They're not going to be able to just roll over people if Julian Fleming does nothing. But we got a lot of good stuff to talk about with Penn State here coming up after the break.
Life's great moments aren't complete without a great cigar for you and your friends. Visit J.M. Boswell's before golf, fishing, a fishing trip to the beach will make your visit easy and fast. Don't show up to that summer party or golf outing without a cigar pack from J.M. Boswell's, 6481 William Penn Highway, Alexandria, PA. Open Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 5. On Saturday from 9 to 4. And always open online at boswellpipes.com. And remember, there is nothing like a Boswell pipe.
Remember when you used to cruise the boulevard back in the day? Maybe you stopped at JMP Automart to check out their inventory. Well, you know you still can. JMP Automart is still rocking Central PA with the best deals. Check them out online at jmpautomart.com, where you can apply for financing and see their inventory of over 200 units. Or cruise in like you used to 1906 Pleasant Valley Boulevard and see them in person. Got a trade? JMP will give you $1,000 push, pull, or tow. Apply for financing online. JMP Automart, in business for 64 years, so they must be doing something right.
Whether it's popcorn for a movie or chips for a family picnic, great times and great snacks go hand in hand. Davison Snacks Outlet is your go-to place for snacks. Whether you want crispy, savory, or sweet, everything from small bags to bulk packages and gift baskets, too. Davison Snacks has Martin's Chips and Snacks, jerky from Bronco Billy's and Rougarou, All-Star Cotton Candy, Little Debbie Snack Cakes, Boyer Candy, Dots Pretzels, Wise Snacks, and more. Life is better with snacks from Davison Snacks Outlet, 16843 Dunnings Highway, Duncansville.
Got Medicaid or are you uninsured? Do you need a doctor? We love to care at Gloria Gates Care, and we're now accepting new members. At Gloria Gates Care, we've got all your needs in one place, and we welcome you to come join us while we help you to receive the quality care you deserve. At Gloria Gates Care, we're redefining healthcare. For office hours and more information, call 814-300-7777. Gloria Gates Care, 2525 9th Avenue, Suite B, Altoona. Online at GloriaGatesCare.com.
It's a grand slam.
Everyone loves a grand slam, and now you can score one with Kepner's Grandview Meats. Stop in at Kepner's Grandview Meats from now until the end of the curve season and register for the Grandview Grand Slam Contest. If your name is called out during WRTA mornings and a grand slam is hit, you win a $100 gift certificate from Kepner's Grandview Meats, the home of quality meats, hot and cold subs, and more. Stop in and register. No purchase necessary. Kepner's Grandview Meats, 1544 Pleasant Valley Boulevard, Altoona.
Get to Mattis Motorsports now for CF Moto ATVs and side-by-sides. Mattis Motorsports is also your headquarters for trailers, both open and closed. Campers, brands like Astoria, Gulfstream, Puma, and more. Bad Boy Zero Turn Mowers in Lear and ARE truck cabs. Give Mattis Motorsports a call at 814-940-6288. Or check them out in person at 1702 East Pleasant Valley Boulevard in the Greenwood section of Altoona. And remember,
if it doesn't say Mattis, you paid too much.
All right, so we're kind of backing into this a little bit because we had the high school call first, Altoona. We are going to talk some Altoona High football coming up around 4:40 or so with Jared Prugar. But Nathan, a really good showing for Penn State, 34-12 win over West Virginia. They checked a lot of boxes for me, things that I really wanted to see in week one. And so now I'm ready to proclaim Penn State's going to win the national title, right?
Nah, let's not overreact quite yet.
Exactly.
Let's not.
That's the danger of something, because that's what I'm seeing a lot of, is that, oh, Penn State went out there and just killed that team. Well, first of all, I think West Virginia was terrible, and I thought their coaching staff was terrible. I thought their play—
I don't want to overreact to either team.
I thought their play calling was terrible.
I agree with
you there. I thought Neil Brown thought he was playing Kent State. He's trying to run up the middle on 4th-and-1 against Penn State. You're not Michigan. That's not working. So let's take into account some of the opponent a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there were a lot of good things. I'll let you go first.
Well, I was just about to ask you, what boxes did you want checked off? Going into the game, what were you thinking? Like, this would be ideal. This would be perfect if they can check it off.
Okay, the number one thing, and this is true for just any football game, and then I'll get to Penn State. The defense needed to have some control of the game.
And they controlled it,
okay,
hands
so
down.
Once the first quarter, because the first quarter is very sloppy, Penn State didn't do anything. They were basic formations and everything, and they didn't play well in the first quarter offensively. But the defense had control of the game. And James likes to, and a lot of coaches like to do this, once he sees that his defense has got control, now you can get creative. So from the second quarter on, they checked all the boxes I want to see offensively. They ran different schemes, the different formations, play designs, scheme formations from Andy Katilnicki, I thought were very clever, very creative. You're using the two quarterbacks. You're getting guys open in space. You're not just throwing to the out every time. They threw a deep pass, obviously, late in the first half. Those are the things, offensively, I wanted to see that Penn State was different from last year.
Yes. So the first thing that I think really impressed me is I thought Aller was using his legs a little bit more, whether that was a designed quarterback run or was just extending plays with them. Because I think last year he had happy feet, meaning like he was just you know, trying to get make quick decisions so he didn't make a bad play or something like that. He was a little, it seemed like he was a little scared, which, you know, the more I look back on it, the more I kind of understand, you know, it's his first time really starting. He's a sophomore. Maybe he just has, you know, some butterflies in his stomach, a little bit of pressure on him. The nerves are getting to him. So I thought, you know, that was completely out of the window. I thought they came out. I thought their defense, like you said, controlled the game. I thought they, you know, really, I mean, Garrett Green, everybody said, oh, this guy's going to rush all over them. It's going to gash them, whether it's RPOs or design quarterback runs. Garrett Green finished with 10 rushes for 5 yards. They held the quarterback in check as well as they needed to. I thought that, you know, their secondary played very well. They held up very well. Besides, I think there was one drive in which West Virginia moved the ball pretty well down the field. But besides that drive, overall, I mean, I thought their defense played incredible. There was a few balls from Aller I didn't like. There was one on, it was on a comeback route on the outside, which really, I mean, if you throw that against Ohio State, that's a pick six. It should have been. The guy had corner jumped it perfectly, and I mean, that was green grass ahead of him if he was able to take that to the house. And the deep ball you were mentioning, he did underthrow it a little bit. Major pass interference they got away with, too. But Aller, I thought, looked a lot better than what I was maybe anticipating coming in. He went 11 for 17, 216 yards, 3 touchdowns. I think a big thing, too, is he averaged 12.7 yards per completion. A lot of times last year, he was, you know, throwing drag routes, you know, quick out routes. He wasn't really pushing the ball down the field. He's throwing 12.7 yards per completion, so that was a lot better than I thought it'd be. Not to mention, I thought Nicholas Singleton, obviously, 13 carries, 114 yards, and 1 touchdown. They ran the ball effectively as well. Their offensive line didn't look like it missed a beat, even though they lost 3 guys, I believe, on that offensive line. So, overall, Penn State, I thought it was an impressive performance. I don't want to overreact to it because I'm not saying, hey, guess what, November 2nd, they're going to beat Ohio State now, because that's not the case yet. They still need to prove it. They still need to continue to go out there and win those games. And, you know, now, especially with the USC team with a big win over LSU, that's going to be a much more difficult game going into it. So they still got some obstacles to overcome. And, you know, there was some timeout situations, too. I thought their timeout management was, you know, a little poor. I thought they burned a few they didn't need to at certain times. So that might need to get, you know, figured out as well.
946-0435 if you want to jump in on what you saw from the Nittany Lions on Saturday. 34-12 over West Virginia, and now the schedule is putrid. And so you get to spend the next month just beating the hell out of people.
Yeah, you get to work on some things, too.
And working on things.
Yes.
And so, again, that's why for me specifically, not that I think West Virginia is very good. That's a 7-5 team at best, probably. And an unranked team. But they checked boxes against a power conference team on the road.
Yeah.
They weren't afraid to do some things. Now, again, I said number one defensively because they did get control of the game. James realized they had control of the game. Now you free up Andy. And a lot of times what happens with Penn State over the years is James waits to halftime to do some of this stuff. This is where I don't like James Franklin as a game coach. He's so conservative going into games. Again, out of one side of my mouth, I'll tell you, it's okay to wait to see if your defense has control of the game, but it's another thing to wait till halftime to start to do some of the things that Penn State really started to do in the second quarter. So I really liked that because traditionally, Penn State reevaluates, reassesses everything at the half, and is a much, much better second half team, has kind of been forever since 2016 under James. But now you have Bowling Green, you'll get nothing out of that game. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing that I see against Bowling Green will change my thoughts about Penn State at all. I don't care if Aller throws for 700 yards. That's a completely meaningless game. Then you got Kent State, ditto. Now, Illinois at home and UCLA at home, those are at least Big Ten teams, or at least Illinois is. I don't consider UCLA a Big Ten team right now. I think Penn State's going to destroy them, like, badly, like 3 touchdowns. But Illinois will be interesting. So you get to feel great about yourself for a month.
You don't really play a game until the 28th when you play Illinois. You got, like you say, you got Ball State, Kent State, off week. Bowling Green, Kent State, off week right there. So you got really a month until you got to play a competent opponent. Now, obviously, it would be a miracle if any of those teams went into Happy Valley and won. That's not going to happen, let's be completely honest. So you get a while, you get to, you know, kind of polish up some things, and that's a big thing. And actually, I was talking with someone today. I actually kind of wish they played Ohio State earlier in the year because Ohio State did not seem very polished going up against Akron. They didn't look the best, and I thought actually maybe Penn State would have an easier time earlier on, you know, if Ohio State made a mistake or two, but that's here nor there. That's obviously not going to happen. But Penn State, they can really, before they get into the meat of their schedule, they can work things out, kind of just, you know, patch up holes that might be on the offense or defensive side. And I think they can really only improve over the next 4 weeks. I don't think there's going to be anything unless someone, you know, a monstrosity of an injury, something crazy happens. It seems like the next month should be, you know, rainbows and cloud the skies for Penn State.
I was on my buddy's radio show on the PA Sports Network earlier today, and we got into this discussion about, well, how good is Penn State's offense? How good does it need to be? And in the Big Ten, or defense, really, let's go defense first. In the Big Ten, what are you going to see from an offensive standpoint from any of these opponents that really scares you outside of Ohio State? Because I still think if they played Georgia, it'd be trouble. Mm-hmm. If they played, but quite frankly, there aren't a lot of great college football teams this year.
There's a lot of vulnerable teams. Oregon was very vulnerable this weekend.
Oregon looked poor, very poor against Idaho, 24-14. The point is, Penn State has a lot of time to develop a defense that I think probably could be vulnerable, but you won't necessarily see it because outside of Ohio State, I don't really think that these teams are going to have the kind of weapons to challenge Penn State deep down the field. Now, USC might. USC's a power program.
USC
they recruited
solid.
Well.
They look solid on
they
Sunday.
They did, but are they going to be able to handle Penn State's physicality? That's always the difference with Penn State is – it's not so much as Penn State's secondary great, it's how much pressure is the front four and the front seven getting on the quarterback and forcing him to make difficult decisions. So I look at this, and I've got Penn State going 10-2. I actually think the loss will be at Wisconsin.
You still think that?
Wisconsin, because it's hard for me to pick a team to beat Penn State that's soft. I'm never going to pick a soft.
So USC and UCLA are out.
UCLA, I think, is going to be one of the softest big.
I think there's no way UCLA wins more than like four
games.
They're
going to be Indiana level soft. Okay. USC, I've watched them a ton over the years. They're one of the few programs in the country I've watched a lot because I work all day at the stadium. I get home at 10 o'clock and USC's still on. Mm-hmm. They're so soft. That program has been so soft. Even when they score a bunch of points, they give up 40-something because their defense is soft. And so the only kind of teams I would really ever think about giving a good chance to beat Penn State or is if you have some kind of tremendous offense or if you're Wisconsin and your entire identity is to be physical. Because to beat Penn State, you've got to be able to line up with Penn State and punch them in the mouth.
You don't think USC can do this
year?
I mean, they did line up to LSU. They did.
That's not the same kind of physicality, I don't think, as Penn State.
I don't think
LSU is. Now, Georgia is. Alabama traditionally has been. LSU, I think, is more of a finesse program than Georgia or Alabama from the SEC.
You can make that argument. I think LSU, I think you still got to – you got to say that's a good win for – USC right there.
That's an excellent win.
Because LSU, they're not
going to come hang 35 on Penn State. There's no way USC is going
to. I don't think they're going to lose to USC. But
right.
I'm saying I think that's more difficult game now that you look at that after they were able to beat an LSU team that LSU. I mean, it's an SEC team. They have to compete against the Alabamas and Georgias, so they're built physically at the offensive line. LSU had a really good offensive line. You know, they still ran the ball pretty well with Emery, I believe his name is. Something like that.
You know what USC's schedule is before Penn State?
Hit me with it.
At Michigan.
Oh, my gosh.
Home against Wisconsin. At Minnesota. Home against Penn State. No bye weeks. So you've got the two most physical programs in the Big Ten, in Michigan and Wisconsin. Then you've got to go to Minnesota, which I know lost, the only Big Ten team to lose. But what I'm saying is, traditionally, to me, USC has been the kind of soft team that after they, even if they win those games.
I was about to say, I think they might win all those games. I really do.
You're missing the point, though.
Okay.
They're going to get their ass beat.
They are, yeah.
Physically.
They're going to be beat up.
That's my point.
I think Penn State's going to control the game at
correct.
USC. I do.
Even if you beat, this is my status for the Big Ten. You are not going to be the same in Week 7 physically. Everybody on your team is 90% then.
I'll agree with
you
100% there.
You don't have guys that are 100%. You've got guys, and then you've got starters that are going to be at 75% going up against a Penn State defense that can rotate 18 guys in there. That's why I really struggle picking anybody to beat Penn State because ultimately when all is said and done, except for Michigan and except for Ohio State, Penn State can line up and physically take control of the game against anybody on their schedule every year.
I'll agree with you 100% there. I'm not going to dispute that. I think USC is going to be beat down by the time they play Penn State, and I think they have the weapons that they might be able to hang with Penn State for a while, maybe until that third quarter.
What if their quarterback gets hurt in one of those games? Now they're starting over. That's the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing that I look at Oregon, USC. Look, I think Washington and UCLA are going to – they might be good every now. UCLA, I don't think is going to be good. Washington might be okay. But for USC and Oregon to have to come in – I've said this for a long time. You go play Rutgers in Piscataway – you're going to get your ass handed to you physically. You might win the game. You might win the game 35-16. What's Schiano going to do?
He's going to run the ball down your throat.
He's going to hit you.
Hit you, yep.
He's going to hit you. You might win. You might go to Minnesota and win. What's P.J. Fleck going to do? They're going to hit you. I joked about Indiana. They're one of the few teams that doesn't play that style. Even Northwestern plays that style. Nebraska's going to hit you. So I really wonder. I think the best thing you've said so far today was if Penn State could get Ohio State early in the year, because Penn State's got more experience, and now you got Ohio State's kind of starting over a little bit with quarterback and wide receiver. I think Ohio State would be much more vulnerable in week, say, 3 or 4.
I think they're very vulnerable. That's why I think when they go to Eugene, I think there's a good chance. Now, I think Oregon's vulnerable as well, but I think – I mean, I don't think the box score tells it all for Oregon. I think they looked a little more dominant than 24-14. It was just way too close to the game that shouldn't have been to that point. But – I think Ohio State has some stuff they got to work out. I think there's definitely – now, Jeremiah Smith kid, that true freshman, number four, watch out. I think he's number four. Watch out for him. He is going to be a problem. He's going to be that guy that is going to torch someone for 250 yards. He feels like the next Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know if he's going to be that good, but the next guy coming in that cycle, it's going to be the great Ohio State wide receiver. So by the time you get to November 2nd, I think things are going to be polished up. Will Howard's going to be, you know, he looked okay, but he didn't look like an Ohio State quarterback. He kind of looked like Kyle McCord on, you know, Saturday when they played Akron. So it'll be interesting to see. I think that their defensive line struggled a little more, too, than I was expecting for them to have. I believe they have all the returning starters on that Ohio State defensive line as well. So that struggled a little more as well. But, I mean, by the time you get to the game, I think that you're going to get the best of both teams, at least, you know, the best you can get at that point in the year.
Anybody want to weigh in what you saw from Penn State or how much better maybe you feel about the team? 946-0435, because, look, we can go on and on and on and on and on about a lot of things that we really liked. That's why I'm kind of glad the one caller mentioned Julian Fleming.
Yeah.
Because that's a question that's going to have to be determined as we go on. What's his role? Another is Abdul Carter. Now, I've been outspoken about this for 3 months. Right. I think Abdul Carter is the most overrated player in college football.
I think he puts immense pressure on a quarterback.
He had one tackle.
Okay.
He had one tackle.
You don't think he should be wearing number 11?
Completely non-factor. I thought he was a complete non-factor in the game.
Okay.
I thought he was a complete non-factor in the game.
I'm going to disagree with you there. I will disagree with you there.
What did he do? What did he do to make an impact on that game in any way? Maybe as a decoy that they had to
that's
feel like they
say.
Had
that's
to.
That's what I'm about to
sure,
say.
Sure.
He just is a decoy out
that's
there,
fine.
Double team, target,
okay.
Stuff like that.
Okay, so what is he? Is he a linebacker? Is he a defensive end? What is Abdul Carter?
I think his more true position is probably the linebacker.
I agree with that, but we've talked about this.
I think moving him to the defensive line is probably a little bit of a – but I mean, he was there most of the time as well. But,
yeah, he was.
But I think, you know, maybe dropping back in coverage every once in a while too, I think that just kind of messes with offensive lines as well, so – I think he should probably be more of an outside linebacker that rushes off the edge.
Let me say this, in fairness. I think he's a really good football player. I don't think he's going to have great stats because I don't think he's the kind of guy, and again, in all fairness to you, because these guys were before you were born.
Yeah.
My first year covering Penn State was 2006. That's Paul Posluszny, Sean Lee, and Dan Connor. That's three of your six best linebackers in the history. Seven
I was
best
about linebackers to say, that linebacker room right
program.
There is insane. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I watched. As the starting linebacker for 13 games last year, Abdul Carter had 48 tackles. Not 135, not 170 like Luke Kuechly when he was at Boston College, not 110 like Gerald Hodges. He had 48 tackles. He's a good football player. This notion that he's a top 10, 15 pick is, where's this coming from? Like, I don't get, he's a second, third round pick maybe to me. And he's a good linebacker, But now you're trying to get him to play stand-up defensive end, going up against guys who are 280, 290 mm-hmm. on the tackle spots, and he's going to be rotating back and forth. I just don't know. I don't know how this is going to work. And it's a concern to me only in a handful of games. So see, everything I'm saying is with a grain of salt because this schedule is so weak.
Yeah.
This is a concern against Ohio State. They don't play Michigan. It would definitely be a concern against Michigan. They don't play Michigan. It'll be a concern against Wisconsin. These really physical teams, I just wonder, that can put a 295-pound tackle who's going to the NFL on Abdul Carter, how effective is he going to be there as a defensive end?
It's one of those things where undersized guys sometimes just work out well on the edge, whether it's like a finesse move. You know, they might not bull rush someone, but they can get around the tackle quicker. They got more speed. They're smaller. They can maybe slip through someone. I think Abdul Carter personally is a really – I don't think he is a first-round guy. I think he's more of a second- to third-round guy.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's basically the conversation for me. I don't want to rip the guy, but I got everybody telling me Abdul Carter's an All-American. He had 48 tackles last year, for God's sake. He was a non-factor in 50% of the games last year.
His presence, though, I think is it draws concerns from defenses. He's a guy in the meeting rooms that they're going to circle and
I agree
say,
with that.
You need to watch out for this guy. This guy's going to wreck the game. And I think that's what takes him out of some games is because they're so focused on him, and that allows a guy like Sutton Smith to open up, and, you know, he had a pretty nice game.
I just don't see Chop Robinson. Chop had an unbelievable motor as a defensive limb. Now, he didn't have unbelievable stats in college either, but he was a guy that his speed, he knew how to rush.
You don't think Abdul Carter has that? I think as a linebacker.
Yet. Maybe as a linebacker, but this is part of the discussion. Why is he playing defensive end?
I don't get that personally. I'm agreeing with you. I don't understand why he's a defensive
end. I've had some people tell me that it's because that's where the money is in the NFL, and they want him to develop as a defensive end because that could help his draft stock in the NFL. A defensive end, a great defensive end is more valuable than a good linebacker in the NFL.
Is T.J. Watt outside linebacker or is he a defense back?
He's really – in the 3-4, he's really a rush guy.
Yes. So that's what feels like Chop Robinson's going to be. That's what feels like Chop Robinson's going to be. Kind of like Khalil Mack as well, where they're outside linebacker, rush edge, basically 50-50 at snaps.
We got J.K. and Altoona. You get the final word on our Penn State discussion today, man. What's going on? Hey, you're breaking up. I didn't hear anything said.
19 –
No, I'm still not hearing anything, JK. Try it one more time.
Are they still on?
Yeah, I can't hear anything you're saying, buddy. I'm getting like one out of every five words. Okay, yeah. All right. Okay, that's happened with JK a couple times here in the last few weeks. So I'll give you the final word here. Again, they checked the boxes I wanted to see. I wanted them to see to show creativity. I wanted Andy Katelniki to have freedom to do some of the things he likes to do. He had Venga Ione going in motion one time. Mm-hmm. My God, as an offensive lineman, that's great.
Yeah.
Guys getting the ball in some space. Those were the things I wanted to see.
Yeah, I thought their offense looked a lot more dynamic. Last year, it felt like it was one-dimensional with the run game, and if that didn't open up, it was kind of just trying to, you know, find something that might work literally mid-game. So I thought their offense looked a lot better than what it has in previous years. So I will say I was impressed with that. Hopefully it does continue. I think there's some stuff they need to clean up. A couple nice, you know, more NFL-type balls from Drew Aller. Well, I thought he played excellent.
Yeah, you're right. That ball was underthrown, the deep one. But it was pressured. Real quick, did you like the two-point try on the first score or not?
I love it. I don't know why teams don't do that more often. I really don't. I think actually if you can get up 8-0, I think it's a little bit more of a statement than a 7-0.
I mean, obviously, I had a lot of Penn State fans come at me and say they hated it because they're used to traditional Penn State football. I loved it because it showed
aggressiveness.
We're going to come again. This was the second quarter. James knew his defense already had some control over the game. So let Andy Katelniki have some fun. It didn't work, but I liked it. We'll have an Altoona High football discussion coming up after the break.
NASCAR Xfinity Series race recap from Darlington Raceway. I'm Kerry Murphy. Cup Series star Christopher Bell, looking for a little extra seat time, grabs his second series win of 2024 in two starts.
It is usually a Denny race. I don't know. I'd say probably a month ago or so. they JGR came up to me and asked if I would be interested in doing it. I said, heck yeah, I would. I love this place. So I'll race any day of the week. I mean, it's hot. It's really, really hot. But, you know, I think I got a lot of time to recover for tomorrow. It's a night race. So I think it's beneficial to do these things, and especially at racetracks like Darlington where it's really tough. So, yeah, I mean, it was a bummer whenever I really started falling off there at the end of third stage, and then Sheldon got by me. But it's never over till it's over. I've learned that many of times. The cars are so different now, the Xfinity cars to the Cup cars, that it's hard to take anything from car to car. But Darlington is just such a unique racetrack that I do think laps here help.
So he's batting 1,000. Seabell led 108 of the 150 laps after surviving an overtime restart. Cole Custer was second, followed by Sheldon Creed, Chase Elliott, Cup Series driver, and Sammy Smith rounds out the top five. Your quick point standings look like this. Justin Allgaier leads Cole Custer by 28 points. Up next for the NASCAR Xfinity Series is Atlanta Motor Speedway. It's going down Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern on USA. This is the final lap.
Progressive presents good news, bad news, dumb news, then great news. Good news. Your coworker Kyle said bundling home and auto insurance with Progressive could save you money. Bad news. While saying this, Kyle was eating your clearly labeled lunch. Dumb news. Pizza near work costs $7 a slice, and it tastes like drywall covered in ketchup. Great news. You decide to see if you could save money bundling at Progressive.com and enjoy more lunches far away from Kyle. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers not available in all states.
Welcome to Staples.
Hi, I need to print for my business, but I really have to watch the budget.
Staples can print whatever you need, and now you get up to 30% off print purchases. So the more you print,
the more I save?
Right.
So if I print $600 worth of signs,
you save $180.
Ooh, and if I print $1 million worth, I'd save...
No clue, but I'm thinking there are a lot of zeros.
Now at Staples, the more you print, the more you save, up to 30% off. Plus, you save even more with hundreds of hot deals throughout the store. Ends 9/7, exclusions apply. Visit staples.com/print for details.
Pacific Coast, bread and rolls, Pacific Coast, bread and rolls, Pacific Coast, Pacific Coast. Bread and rolls, Pacific Coast. Bread and rolls, Pacific Coast. Bread and rolls, Pacific Coast.
Life's great moments aren't complete without a great cigar for you and your friends. Visit J.M. Boswell's before golf, fishing, a fishing trip to the beach will make your visit easy and fast. Don't show up to that summer party or golf outing without a cigar pack from J.M. Boswell's, 6481 William Penn Highway, Alexandria, PA. Open Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 5. On Saturday from 9 to 4. And always open online at boswellpipes.com. And remember, there is nothing like a Boswell pipe.
All right, we appreciate J.M. Boswell for being our presenting sponsor each and every day and supporting our little program. It was pretty jarring if you checked in on the score Friday night, Altoona at State College, 36-0 after one quarter.
I forget if it was close to that. I think maybe a little bit into the second. It was 50-0 at halftime.
50-0 at the half. And you're kind of wondering, like, again, that's not something you look at and say, wow, I wonder what's going on. That's kind of something you look at and say, oh, my God, that's a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So Jared Prugar joins us right now. I'm really curious to hear Jared's thoughts on this because he covers Altoona football. He's the color commentator guy on the broadcast. He was there with Jake Irwin, played at Altoona, coached at Altoona. Jared, I know you want to say good things about Altoona football. And we're not just going to rip a bunch of high school kids here. Was Altoona 50-0 at the half bad? Was State College 50-0 at the half good? Was it a mixture of both? How does something like that happen?
I think it was very much a mixture of both. And it was 22-0 after the first quarter, but it pales in comparison to essentially 9-0 after two series, and that was for either team. So, you know, they started out just anything that could go wrong did go wrong. It's like Alexander and the horrible No Good Very Bad Day, right, the children's book. Three and out, and on third down, they fumble. State College gets it, boom. Next drive, fumble goes through the end zone, boom. So that's already 9-0, and they've barely had the ball, and it's just ugly. And then St. Colley scores again, and they just couldn't get out of the way of the buzzsaw. And there were a ton of penalties as far as personal fouls for both teams. But Altoona just couldn't help themselves. And it's just one of those games. When it's your night, it's your night. And when it's not, it was not. And that's kind of the way that it went. You know, Altoona just did not execute when they needed to. And anything that could go wrong did, in fact, go terribly wrong.
We talk a lot about what a high school football team means to a community. If you're part of a community that you've got a great high school football program, it is an unbelievable source of pride. It is one of those things that everybody in town is there. All businesses close up. That's the beauty of Friday Night Lights. That's the beauty of Remember the Titans. That's the beauty of even Varsity Blues.
Love Varsity
which is
Blues.
A great movie.
Great movie.
But Altoona lost to Hollidaysburg in its opener for the fifth time in seven times, and then you lose 57-0 to your other rival in week two. Is there a concern, Jared, that the feeling in the Altoona football community could be panic, or is it too early to say that yet?
I think it's definitely too early, but I also have to tepid, the expectations, right? It's just one of those situations where you just kind of have to see how the season goes. Obviously, I think there's probably going to be some changes. Obviously, there has to be after two games, and it hasn't gone very well. You know, it's weird because against Hollidaysburg, they had 5 turnovers, and we're still very much in that game. Obviously, 3 turnovers against State College. One ends up a scoop and score, and then the others, obviously – fumble and then an interception. So it was a tale of two games. And, and that's the nature of the scheduling beast. You lose to Hollidaysburg week one, then you come back and get demolished by State College in week two, and it's just never fun. Obviously, those are the two teams that you gear up to beat each and every year. And to lose the way that they did to State College, it's dejecting and demoralizing. But now you get to see the response. And I think that's what the community is really excited for. It's a game back at Mansion Park. There's some new guidelines this Friday night after their home opener against Hollidaysburg. People are just excited to see them play at home again for alumni night. So for alumni band night, I guess I should say. So it's going to be a great crowd regardless of the game. And hopefully they can get back into some winning football.
Hey, Prugars, Nathan Forlani here. So it's been a rough couple of weeks, obviously. Is there a chance that the offensive playbook opens up? I mean, I graduated from Altoona a couple of years ago. I felt like it was Groundhog's Day every single time I went into Mansion Park for a Friday night. It was just triple option over and over and over and over again. Do you see this offensive playbook opening up against Cumberland Valley one bit?
I'd like to sit here and say that I would love to see it evolve. Not necessarily evolve, but, right now your B-back is essentially the fullback, and he's 150, 175 pounds. That's not really feasible. And in this offense, you have to have a great fullback. And that's not saying that Julian Hazelwood, the running back, isn't a very good running back, because I think he is. When he gets out in space, he showed it against Hollidaysburg, he can do some pretty nice things.
Absolutely.
But it's hard to get into space when you're going between the tackles and when you're running the ball like that. But I would like for them to. I think you have to get a little bit thicker on at running back. I'm not sure if that involves a position change for maybe MJ Harrington, who is the quarterback, or not. But I think with the way the skill guys that they do have, it would be nice to see them open it up a little bit. They threw it a little bit against State College, but the way the triple option is, it's not really built to come back from big deficits or money deficits at all.
Jared Prugard joined us. Nathan mentioned that specifically last week, that if you get down even a little bit, it's tough. Altoona went 5-7 last year, bad loss to State College, 49-7, but still came out and won some games, 6-6 the year before. And the year before that was, I believe, 4-7. So, look, when they go up against some of these behemoths in conference, it's not pretty. When they go up against some overpowering teams, it's not pretty. Where is this program in terms of, again, with the triple option, is this just what they're going to be? Is this what Vince has said? This is what we are. This is all we are. This is all we're ever going to be. Is this option sink or swim? And that's all Altoona football is: Navy, Georgia Tech, Air Force.
I think to a point, yeah. And I think it's something that, you know, you have to kind of have to evaluate every year based on, you know, the way that I look at offenses is just making sure that everything is all set and making sure that you have the right players where they need to be and really maximizing those players. Because every high school player is different. I mean, not everybody is going to go D1. And I think this offense allows you to utilize a lot more players than you typically would, say, in a spread offense or even a basic pro offense. But it's one that you can use at the elementary level, the junior high level, and have players know what they're doing when they get to you. And I think that is helpful, and it's less confusing. But, again, you have to have the personnel. And I think you have to put personnel in the positions where they can succeed. And that's the hardest part about high school football. You just don't know what you're going to get every Friday night. And I think that's why this offense is something that Coach Niedermeyer loves. Obviously, he's familiar with it. There's a comfort level there. But is it going to be sustainable for years to come? I don't know. I just know that it is tough to defend when it's working. But when it's not working, it's not good. And that's kind of where they're at right now. And, you know, it's worked in the past. When they've had Stroud and Yost and Bron Moseley, it's worked. And you've seen it work. I mean, that year with Stroud and Yost, and they win the district championship in 2020, that offense got us right where it needed to be. With Marcus Day and Trevor Manley up front, like Marcus Day at quarterback, you know, those guys are really good football players.
Jared, we got about 90 seconds left. Nathan wanted to jump in with one more quick question.
So you kind of mentioned real quick there. Do you think there is a quarterback change coming? Does MJ move to, like, the halfback, fullback type position? Do you think that's going to come here in the future if they continue to run this offense?
I think so. I think it would make sense. Obviously,
I agree with you there. 100% agree with you.
A senior quarterback or senior football player that's looking to play at the next level, I don't think quarterback at that in this offense is the right move. But I do think he gives you some really good options at the fullback position, and it opens up the offense a little bit, depending on who they can get to hand the ball off to him or even, you know, take that method of thinking and reading out. He can just get the ball and go and be athletic again, and I think that might not be a bad option for him moving forward.
Jared, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You can hear Jared on the call of the game Friday. And real quick, Nathan, just real quick here.
Yeah.
Again, the community bases its identity around the football team. And so when you see 50-0, that's really a disheartening kind of thing to see.
Yeah, it's half. It's tough. It really is tough. I mean, kind of puts you in a bad mood. It really does. So hopefully things change. They got Cumberland Valley. They're 1-1. They're coming off a win, I want to say 35-0 over Carlisle. So we'll see what happens. I mean, right now, Altoona is 165th in PA. So.
All right, we'll wrap things up after this.
Life's great moments aren't complete without a great cigar for you and your friends. Visit J.M. Boswell's before golf, fishing, a fishing trip to the beach will make your visit easy and fast. Don't show up to that summer party or golf outing without a cigar pack from J.M. Boswell's, 6481 William Penn Highway, Alexandria, PA. Open Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 5. On Saturday from 9 to 4. And always open online at boswellpipes.com. And remember, there is nothing like a Boswell Pipe.
With all the activities and sports you and the kids are involved with, who has time to cook? So with that in mind, let's go to Best Way Pizza for the 3-cut lunch deal with a soda. Let's go to Best Way Pizza for their awesome 15-cut big deal. Let's go to Best Way Pizza for the 28-cut party box. It's time to get you and your team to Best Way Pizza before or after the game. Best Way Pizza, Greenwood, Altoona, and Hollidaysburg.
At Shoe Fly, they think on their feet so you can walk in comfort and style. When you step into Shoe Fly, you'll be greeted by a friendly and knowledgeable staff who will assist you in finding the perfect shoe for any occasion. Shoe Fly believes that every foot problem has a fitting solution, and they will work with you to make sure you don't have to sacrifice style for comfort. For more information or to schedule a professional fitting with one of Shoe Fly's fit specialists, visit their website, shoeflystores.com. Your feet will thank you.
ARC Federal Credit Union can help you with many of the important things in life. If you'd like to become a member, ARC has growing opportunities, and you'd be surprised at how easy it is to qualify now that ARC includes over 24 local employers and organizations. And with 2 branches, it's easier than ever. Services like business loans, online banking, and mobile deposit. Let us show you the many benefits of being a member of ARC Federal Credit Union. Stop into 1919 7th Avenue in Altoona and 419 North 7th Street in Juniata.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams September holiday sale and get 30% off paints and stains from August 30th through September 9th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated. And you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all of that. We find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F-word. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free to try ZipRecruiter for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Hey, Nathan, let's follow that up with some F words for Penn State. Fun.
Fantastic.
Fresh offense. What else we got? Anything else? I got nothing else.
Yeah, my vocabulary doesn't run that deep.
You know what? It is overreaction time. Penn State does look really good. McAfee's thinking they're going to win the whole damn thing.
Don't blame him.
But the good news is the schedule is so bad that outside of Ohio State and obviously that trip to USC, you know, Penn State's going to be favored in every game, and they probably will be favored against USC. So you got to like where they are.
Yeah, I like where they are. We'll see how this continues. So,
all right, thanks everybody. Black and Gold Breakdown coming up next.
Sports Central is an exclusive presentation of 96.1 Hank FM. WKMC Roaring Spring Altoona.